This episode is brought to you by Mind Happy. We all spend way too much time in front of our screens. I know I do. And I find myself craving creative yet restful analog activity. I never thought I would long for the downtime of my childhood in the 90s making friendship bracelets at summer camp. This is why we were so excited when we discovered Mind Happy. Mind Happy is a lifestyle and wellness brand centered on thoughtful creativity to help people craft fulfilling moments, connections, and self-care rituals through purposeful play. Mind Happy provides curated monthly deliveries that promote phone-free activities like knitting, coloring, and crafting. Each delivery provides everything you need to explore new hobbies, promote mindfulness, and foster togetherness. They believe that play is one of the most effective ways to relax and re-energize in our daily lives.
Mind Happy's founder is an ex-Amazon executive who leveraged similar activities to alleviate her own burnout. It takes a creative approach to mental health through psychology-backed activities, sparking everyday inspiration and joy, and all activities are selected based on science, restoring mental clarity, energizing connections, reducing anxiety, and facilitating fulfilling moments. Think of it as a curated monthly self-care delivered to your door. We also love that products from each box are primarily sourced from small women-owned businesses, and they can be tailored towards individual discovery or shared group activities, perfect for a small dinner party. For 15% off your first month subscription, go to mindhappy.com. That's mindhappy.com and use code COURAGE15 at checkout.
Welcome to Courageous Wellness. My name is Erica Stein.
And I'm Allie French. And this is a podcast about individual journeys within wellness and how to navigate it all.
After Allie experienced a cancer diagnosis in her 20s,
and Erica went through a self-love journey, we created a platform to interview real people from all walks of life that have combined all types of practices. From physical wellness to emotional and spiritual, we hear courageous stories and focus on why it's important to share them.
We are both certified integrative nutrition health coaches, and together with our community, are learning to live our most purposeful lives by sharing one courageous story at a time.
It takes courage to share these journeys, and by talking about them, we aim to destigmatize the process. We want you to be your own health advocate, feel educated and informed on the latest in health and wellness, and empower you to feel your absolute best.
And because we want to bring forth a wide variety of stories, the opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect our own, but we hope the diverse and varied stories will empower you to make the best choices for your own life. So join us as we and our community share our courageous wellness.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of Courageous Wellness. We have a great episode for you today with Abigail Rose Clark. But before we get into it, we're going to do our weekly updates. And I'm going to pass it to Allie to go first in a second. But I hope everybody is doing well this week. We just had a new moon solar eclipse on the 8th. So if you're feeling that energy, you're feeling that energy. It was also Allie's birthday on the 8th. So happy birthday, Allie. And Mercury is in retrograde. So a lot of stuff in the sky at the moment. But before we get into this great episode with Abigail, we're going to do our weekly update. So Allie, what is your update this week?
My update is I'm currently in Japan and loving the birthday celebration over there. Actually, my update is about something I've been thinking about since recording with Dr. Kate Shanahan, who's actually, this recording will be coming out in May. And it's actually going to be on seed oils, but go with me on this for a second. The way she was talking about the body and really breaking down like the biochemistry of what we're made of, like as organic matter.
Yeah.
And that how that's not dissimilar from our natural world. I mean, we are, you know, we are these series of like biochemical things and matter. And the way she was talking about even like lipid chains, it's so surprising the effect that it had on me. And Erica, it reminds me of your experience when you said you really started educating yourself about the gut microbiome, I was really thinking about like when I can think about my body in that way and the chemistry in it. There's a way to sort of differentiate the noise of certain things. And Abigail actually talks about this too, like not serving systems of domination with our bodies, which is sometimes what we're taught and socialized to do. But really, like, it just like totally changed my perspective on and a way I think about my body and how I can care for it too. And so anyway, it's going to be a great episode. It's actually really enlightening on the processing and the toxicity of the processing of seed oils, but also like the history of it with Procter & Gamble. I highly recommend the episode when it comes out. I certainly learned a lot. But the kind of surprising side effect of that conversation is it's really been helping me think about my own relationship with the way that I like the way I relate to my body and the cells in it, literally the cells. So
yeah,
I thought that was cool.
It was. And it's a great conversation. It's with, as Ali mentioned, Dr. Kate Shanahan. Her book comes out in May. So the episode will be released along with her book. So look out for that. The book is called Dark Calories too, which is, you know, again, all about seed oils.
It's a little bit of a buzzy, I'm sure like a buzzy title, but it's really, it really just goes into the science about how they're made and how that, what kind of reaction that creates in our bodies. So
yeah. Well, my update this week has to do with Abigail's episode, because when we recorded this episode a couple months back, I had not really dived into the world of somatic therapy for myself, but it was something that was really of interest to me. And I've been in talk therapy for years now, and it's been so helpful. And I finally this year felt ready to go deeper into the world of somatics and moving emotions through my body and really processing things, you know, releasing them through my body. And so I mentioned in an intro, I think it was in JJ Martin's episode, it might have been, but a couple months back, I mentioned that I had taken a somatic dance class, and it was unbelievable. Like, I felt such a shift that evening. Like, I felt a release from my body just in one, you know, like 4 hour somatic dance class. It was a huge shift. And since then, I've actually found a somatic therapist who takes my insurance. It's my copay. It's all I got to pay. It's, you know, incredible. And we've been doing somatic work. We've been doing art therapy. It is, Ali, it is unbelievable what somatics has done for me. Like, the practice of somatic therapy, embracing this type of therapy. And I wasn't really open to it. I don't know what the block was. Maybe it was fear, but I feel like things come to us when we're ready for it. And so I'm ready for it, and I'm loving it, and I'm really enjoying it. And I feel like it's helping me come home to myself in a different way. And I was even talking to Ali offline about some family stuff that's been coming up, and I'm dealing with it and reacting to it in a way that I've never dealt with and reacted to things. I'm an Aries Mars for our astro girlies. I am rawr when I get angry. And all of a sudden, just in, you know, the couple months of this somatic work, I'm less rawr. Like, I'm really, I feel like something is shifting in me. So that's been cool. And having conversations like this with Abigail, I think we did talk a bit about somatics with JJ Martin too, because it was so impactful for her and her healing journey. I just really appreciate Abigail's work. I loved her book. I loved this conversation. And so that's a little update that's kind of relevant to the episode. Not relevant to this episode, as you can't see on the screen, but I got unicorn nails. I got sparkly lavender chrome manicure for the eclipse. But, you know,
somatics
and unicorn nails are my update. So,
this is, if you saw the difference between mine and Erica's nails, you would literally just see the difference between us. I can't remember the last time I had a manicure.
It's, but the Libra Aries, the sister signs.
Sisters. Well, Since we have this great episode, why don't we get right into it?
Let's do it.
So today on the podcast, we welcome Abigail Rose Clark, author, somatic educator, writer, and artist. She is the creator of the Somatic Tarot, the Body Oracle Deck, and the Embodied Life Method, which she has been teaching throughout the United States and internationally since 2014. The Embodied Life Method aims to help people return to their bodies to find ease and comfort, even when life is difficult and the changes are extreme and fast approaching.
Today, she joins us to discuss her new book titled Returning Home to Our Bodies that was released in January. Connecting somatics, nature, and social change, Abigail shows us how to return to a deep relationship with our bodies, the natural world, and each other, especially when we've been taught to think of our bodies in specific narratives designed to serve domination systems. Resisting these narratives, readers are reminded of how we can reconnect to our bodies with awe and curiosity in order to dismantle oppressive systems and work toward healing. We have a great conversation with Abigail, and we hope you enjoy this episode as much as we did. This episode is brought to you by Sprout Living. One of our favorite new snacks are Sprout Living's probiotic almonds. Wildly delicious and irresistibly crunchy, these are the perfect gut-healthy balanced snack. Each pack of the sprouted and activated organic almonds contain 10 billion CFUs of probiotics, 6 grams of clean plant protein, and a variety of other superfood spices and herbs that do the body good.
They're made without seed oils, which we all know are out, and the flavors. The Italian truffle is delicious, and the dairy-free cheddar cheese made with turmeric and nutritional yeast always hits the spot. Honestly, we may never have another chip again. Sprout Living also makes our favorite plant-based protein blends. My personal favorite is the coffee flavor.
If you want to try Sprout Living, you can save 20% off your entire order by using code COURAGEOUS at checkout. Visit www.sproutliving.com and use code COURAGEOUS to save 20%. Give them a try and let us know if you love them as much as we do. You can also find the direct links in our show notes. So thank you, Abigail, so much for joining us today. As we were just talking a second ago offline, we are so excited to dive into your book, Returning Home to Our Bodies, Reimagining the Relationship Between Our Bodies and the World, and Practices for Connecting Somatics, Nature, and Social Change. But before we get into all of that, can we start a little bit with your background and your personal journey? How did you grow up and how did you get into this work?
Right. Yeah, we can get into it. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. My background. So I share a bit about it in the book because I felt like it was important to let people know who I am, since it's a book about, you know, it's a personal quest or it's a personal journey. It didn't feel right to just sort of be an unembodied figure that was writing the book. So there is a lot more details in the book that readers can definitely get if they read it. But to give a brief sort of introduction, I grew up as the only child of a single working mom in a rural part of Western Massachusetts. I'm actually here now. I moved back about 3 years ago. I was out of the country during the whole quarantine era. So, which was significant, of course. And I had a really tortured relationship with my body going, you know, through my teens and early 20s. I'm fairly public about having had a long-standing eating disorder for, you know, from early teens all the way into mid-late 20s. I can gratefully say that that's no longer, I've passed through that in the sense of, you know, having an active eating disorder, but I'm a person living in the modern world. So I would say that I still have a rather, you know, difficult relationship with my body on many days, especially I'm an aging woman in the modern world. So I want to name that because I love the body. I love what my physicality can offer me and teach me, and the way that my body is engaged with in the external world has not really ever been easy for me. So that's been there from the beginning. But I made my way into somatics first going into the natural world organic farming, working on different projects in the tropics and in all various parts of the United States, long stretches of time in the wilderness. And that helped me sort of re-enter into a relationship with my body. And then when I met my prime, well, I consider my primary teacher, Patty Townsend, then I was introduced into a way of being in the body that wasn't about controlling it or controlling myself or trying to lose weight or stay skinny or do any of the things that I had been doing up until that point. And it was very relational and very transformative. So that started in my early 20s is when I met her. Then I had a really bad car accident at 27, right after finishing my 200-hour teacher training. And what's kind of funny is that I remember on our final exam being like, I'm not really sure I understand the sacrum and how it really relates to the body. And bam, I had to understand it because I herniated L4, L5. I couldn't really walk. They were saying that surgery and cortisone shots were going to be my only way to have a relatively active life. But even still, I was going to have to do constant pain management. And I decided to hold off on going that route immediately. Nothing against Western medicine. I was just like, let me just see what happens if I don't do that first. And it was a long, slow process, mostly on the floor, of learning really small and subtle movements and learning how to walk again and healing something really painful, both physically and emotionally. And, within 3 months I was walking, within 6 months I had no pain. So that gave me this insight into just the power of being present in the body in a very slow way. And over the years, that has developed into what I call the embodied life method and what has been now shared in this book. So I'm excited to talk about all of it.
Yes. Thank you so much. For sharing a little bit about how you came to this. I think it's important to, as you said, like, be an embodied person when you're sharing these tools, but also, I think it's a way that like a lot of our listeners and people can just relate to each other. You talk about in the book that it's a book about relationship and many kind of facets of that. And so I think even talking about like our ever-changing relationship with our sense of our bodies in relationship with our own bodies too. So many people can relate to, especially having dealt with complex kind of feelings around it, but also, you know, accidents or injury or whatever that might be that informs your own experience in your body at any given time. Trying to decide where I want to start. One of the things that I found sort of interesting kind of in the intro, some of the earlier parts of your book was you're establishing it. It's, you talk a lot about sort of past, present, and future, creating a future that, you know, obviously doesn't exist yet, but in a lot of systems that sometimes keep us from feeling creative or I'm sure hope goes in and out of that as well. But sometimes, you know, when we have generations of systems that you explore, like that create a culture of domination or culture, things that we deal with culturally that can feel restrictive or binary. The effects that has on the body. And then also, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but you also explore sort of like the reciprocal relationship that like if culture informs the body can also inform culture. And that's sort of like this hopeful, at least the way I read it was like this hopeful way that we can talk about creating future. And so can you share with us a little bit about that idea? And I guess the relationship between culture and our bodies?
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. And you nailed it. The way that I see it, you know, kind of using this idea of balanced equations that we all learned in Algebra 1 back in middle school, right, is that, you know, if you have something affecting something on one side, it's going to have an equal and opposite reaction on the other side. So We can see that the body is affected by culture, and you can see that in various different ways. One of my movement teachers years ago would refer to the hip as a cultural joint, because the way that we spent our first years, especially, because since when we're born, the pelvis is made of different bone, is made of several different bones, and then they fuse together, right? So the way that we spend our first year in particular can have an effect on how those bones fuse, if we are held, if we're put into baby bouncing chairs, if we're in those, like, the car seat goes to the car, back into the house, etc. But then also, how do we move our bodies? Are we, like, now, sitting is the new cigarettes, right? We're not supposed to sit. So we know that culture affects our bodies. It's kind of baked into the zeitgeist. We might not be specifically saying it, but we know it's true. We also have to remember that these cultural ideas of race and class and gender also have an effect, right? So gender is a social construct. We can talk all day about that. The ways that our gender it influences how we are seen as either valuable or invaluable, safe, protected, or dangerous. The way that that affects how we are seen by the culture will affect our physiological health. And there's studies on that showing that that is true. Race is the same way, class is the same way. So these social things, these social systems that are made up, right? They were made up by people. But they have real effects. And if we're going to really talk about the body, we have to be willing to talk about these things, because otherwise, what ends up happening is that we end up kind of defaulting to the white norm and saying, well, this is what it's like to be in a body. But it's like, well, that's what it's like to be in that specific body. And we're not having a nuanced conversation full of really important factors, right? But if we're going to talk about that, then it can feel all like doom and gloom. And these days, everything feels like all we're doing is naming the problems. And that's an important stage, but it can't be where we stay, because it starts to get really also just, it's an invitation to eventually people checking out into their own privilege, and or people falling into a despair that is really quite frightening, right? And I think we're seeing that play out in some pretty significant ways right now, especially with things like the way that the war is going in Palestine, or the ways that police violence against Black and Indigenous people, the ways that this is just sort of ongoing. If we stay just in the naming of the problem, while it's necessary, it can lead to a certain sort of helplessness and despair. So I'm not saying that we should not talk about it. I'm saying we should talk about it and then consider what could happen on the other side of that. And the body offers all of these different examples. And what's really exciting and inspiring to me is that while I'm not a politician, I'm not a billionaire, so my reach is pretty minimal, right? I have some influence in the world. We all do, but my reach is not going. I can't instantly just like sign something that changes aspects of the world. But I can have a different relationship with my body and myself, that then means that I have a different relationship with the people that I am in close contact with, my partner, my closest friends, my community, my family. And that starts to have these rippling changes and effects, specifically in my own life, but hopefully it starts to generate more and more change so that we don't animal farm ourselves, right? And sort of say that we want to overthrow these violent systems and then just repeat those violent systems within our own homes and communities. So, being in a relationship with the body, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, this is how we change the world, because I'm not sure right now that that is possible. And I would feel really self-aggrandizing to say that I know how we can do it. But I have seen in my own life that it's possible to change really long-standing patterns in families, in partnerships, in friendships, and in my own personal life through a different relationship with the body.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. Allie and I met through our Buddhist practice about 9 years ago now, which is wild. And in Buddhism, it's really interesting because it's world peace through the individual, right? Through individual happiness, through individual transformation. And a lot of it has to do with those ripple effects, right? Like when we change, our environment changes. And it can feel sometimes, even as a practicing Buddhist, as like the long way, because, right, I wish I was somebody with that kind of influence to like make that, like just change the world. But it really feels like the way, because as you mentioned, we can change the political leaders and then just have new political leaders in different hats that create different harm or more harm, or, you know, as we've seen through history. And also, as you mentioned, I've heard that too in my Buddhist practice of, you know, there's this concept of like fundamental darkness and fundamental enlightenment. But when you focus, like I'm so good at like focusing on the darkness, right? Where I'll be like, well, this is the problem, the problem, the problem. But I've been very encouraged to be like, okay, but like, how are we going to transform? Like, what is the transformation part? And so you're really speaking my language. This makes a lot of sense to me. And especially too, because I understand and I see so many people who understandably, right, like are angry and in so much despair and want to change the world, but then their local community is suffering, right? Or their family is suffering, or what, right? Like whatever it may be. And I sometimes feel, and I don't know if you feel this too, it's almost, I don't want to say easier or a form of escape, but it's like a channel. I think like sometimes going to the local and focusing on your community or focusing on your family or focusing on the localized suffering might be harder because it's more personal than focusing on the bigger thing that you can kind of channel this understandable, correct pain towards. I don't know what you think about that too, but just kind of that channeling of the pain in our body sometimes to something that seems so big or impossible, because it is a little bit harder to focus on our own inner transformation or our own local.
Yeah, that's where the messy stuff really is. I was joking with a friend, because when I was out of the country, I was in my home in Mexico for all of the quarantine eras. I was mostly there for like the greater part of the last decade. And then in 2021, I came back to live in my family home with my mom. And I was joking with my friend about, you know, having some feelings about just like, why did I choose to do the hardest thing that I've ever done in my career, write a book, which, like, side note, if anyone ever tells you, oh, you should write a book, you can just guarantee that they have not written a book, because anyone that has written a book would be like, okay, yeah, you want to write a book? Like, all right, you're going to need a bulk pack of tissues and you're going to need some really good support. And like, you know, here's my number. You might want to call me, right? Like, I just would never be like, oh yeah, definitely do it. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. It took major soul excavation work. It was physically, intellectually, emotionally challenging, right? And I did it while living with my mom, and it brought up everything, right? Like just all of the stuff. And I can gratefully say that on the other side of writing the book, my mom and I have a better relationship than we ever have. But it was really hard, and it took, like, at times, I mean, I think it made the book better. And that's why I was joking with my friend that I could have moved to a different part of the country, moved with some different friends, whatever. I had all these different options. But then what? It's like, oh, you're having a hard time, just go and move in with your best friends and have a great time, and it'll be you'll have an awesome life. Instead, I went right into the core of it. And there are times that, you know, I didn't bring it up into the book because I didn't want to make it about me. But I had to really dig into, what am I doing here that can it have an actual effect on this very, like, I mean, mother-daughter relationships, right? It's just like, they are always so complex. And can this have an effect on that relationship? And I'm so grateful to be able to be living in this reality of saying, yes, it can, right? And it's not easy. And in some ways, it would have been easier to just be like, you know what, I'm done cutting the family out. Like, I don't want to have to deal with it. And while there are definitely cases where we should, right, just be like, all right, you're not, I'm not willing to go into this ugliness with you. I think that there has kind of, you know, the cancel culture has kind of gotten its hooks into us and encouraged us to think that it should be something just like, I'm just not going to look, right? And so if it is something where we have to be really honest with ourselves, am I pulling away because I don't want to get into this messiness? Or am I pulling away because this is like, this has to end, right? So with that caveat there, you know, really being willing to dig into the messy, muddy, murky stuff is how we can make much more transformative relationships. And that's really, that is beautiful to me. It's not perfect and it's definitely not easy, but that's where I think that, you know, we have to have a clear conversation about, you know, somatics isn't easy. It gets sold as being easy. Oh, this is the easy way to lose weight, have better sex, have better relationships, look better, do this, da 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 da, make more money, all the things. But it's not easy. It would be easier to check out, right? Especially in a world that's constantly giving us options of how to do it. But there is an ease that is only accessible when we turn towards what needs to get turned towards and we get into it, right? There's an ease that is available then, but it's not easy.
1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Whether you want to start learning a new language from scratch or are like me and wanting to come back to learning a language after studying it years ago, Babbel gives you the tools and confidence you need. Babbel's convenient courses helped me freshen up my Italian skills after years away from the language. It was so easy to learn how to order food again, ask for directions, and speak to merchants without having to consult a language app while I was on vacation in Italy.
I am so excited for Babbel to be a sponsor of the Courageous Wellness podcast because I have wanted to use them for so long. I really want to learn French, and I am finally going to make that commitment to myself this year. So Babbel's wide range of learning experiences, ranging from casual to intense, means there's always a way to fit in a Babbel session, from self-study app lessons to podcasts to live classes. Also, you will get access to more than 13,000 hours of learning content and can browse more than 20,000 classes offered every month. Let's not forget that learning a new language is also great for challenging our minds. So here's a special limited time deal for Courageous Wellness listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/courage. Get 55% off at babbel.com/courage, spelled BABBEL.com/courage. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Speaking of somatics being sold in many different ways now and being very buzzy, can you give us, you do dive into language in your book, and can you give us your definition or how you define somatics for us, for our listeners, just so that we can sort of all be on the same page about what we're actually talking about? Because there is sort of this inundation of like just kind of using it as to sell a bunch of things, and it's like the latest like buzzy word in the wellness world. You know, there's always a new one, but this is sort of one of the moment now. And so can you just kind of define it for us and talk a little bit about what it actually is?
Yeah, it's so funny though, as you're asking that question, I was just thinking to myself how funny it is to have, I've been doing this long enough that in the first podcast I ever did, people were like, so tell me, what is somatic? I've never heard that word before. And now it's just like, so what do we really mean? Because everyone's saying it, right? So somatic, it comes from the Greek soma, meaning of the body. And so I consider it to mean of the whole body, which means then that it has to consider the whole world, because the body as a whole is affected by the world as a whole. We were just talking about that, right? In comparison, anatomy comes from the Latin anatomia, to cut into pieces. So anatomy is literally the study of the parts. And everything we know about somatics has anatomy in there, right? Like we can't, it's, I need anatomy in order to understand somatics in the way that I do. I have my collection of anatomy books that I love. I'm always looking for the next one. I love that field of study. But if I'm only looking at the parts and I forget that what I'm really trying to do is understand the parts to come back into the whole, then I've kind of lost the thread, right? So somatics and the way that I teach it is and practice it is to be in a relationship with the whole of my body and the whole of my world. And that is through the whole of my senses, the whole of my memories. You were talking about past, present, future all at once. What I mean by that is recognizing that of course the past has an influence on me. And of course the future does as well. If we stop thinking of time as just a linear march. And I can definitely, if I'm trying to get into the present moment, I have to recognize that is always a dance between past and future, right? So somatics is the whole messy bundle of it that we can utilize parts and pieces for. Now, I think that as we look at the buzzword, you know, somatic workouts, somatic business, somatic this, somatic that. I mean, like the Instagram hashtag and TikTok hashtag is like, wow. I would just encourage people as they engage with it to just to check and see when people are using somatic, could you say nervous system and have it mean basically the same thing? Because I think that that gets used a lot, that there's like people say somatic and then they say, this is how you can hack your nervous system. This is how you can regulate your nervous system. They're making big claims, right? We're not just a nervous system. Like, thank goodness. Because have you ever seen that picture of like, it's like, this is your nervous system removed from your body. And it's freaky looking. It's just like eyes and a bunch of nerves. So we're not just the nervous system. So if I am only focusing on just this one part and getting pulled into just this one part and what it can do for me. Oh, this can make me lose weight, have more money, have better success, do all these things, be more productive. Then I've lost the thread.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I was just telling you a little bit offline before we started recording that I did my first somatic workshop last night, and it was really interesting. And you know, I've been through a lot in my 35 years, as many of us listening have, at whatever age we're at. And I've done the therapy. I have a great Buddhist daily practice. Like I've done a lot of work on myself and also work to support others. And I think this somatic work might be like a final thread for me, or maybe not. I don't think we're ever at the end. I think life is a continuum of peaks and valleys and transformation and all the things. But I think at this moment, I finally feel ready to do somatic work, because with everything I've been through, and I'm also very into astrology. Our listeners know this, but I'm all air and fire in my astrology. So I'm in my head a lot, you know, like I can intellectualize pretty much anything. I can understand things with my head, but it's a lot harder for me to tap into my body. And it's really hard. I think it hasn't always felt safe to be in my body. And I think it took me truly 35 years to be like, I finally feel safe enough to be in my body and now do this somatic work. And so I did the workshop last night because I have a friend who has found somatic practices very transformational in dealing with her trauma. And it helped her a lot before she conceived her first child, who's now 1 year old. And so it was with her that I was able to do this workshop. And it was a lot, I'm not gonna lie, to like move my body in that way. But it felt freeing, and it almost brought me back to like a childlike state of I can't describe it other than like I used to have big tantrums as a kid, and I don't know, but like the way I started like moving my body, it felt almost like a safer tantrum. This might sound crazy, but again, I'm very new to this work. And I slept so well afterwards. Like I had like the deepest, most peaceful sleep that I've had in a while. And I just felt something released, but I don't understand it at all, right? Because I'm so new to it. I'm just kind of following that thread. And so again, you know, in your book, you do talk about these somatic practices for connecting to nature, to social change, to our bodies. Can you talk about some of these somatic practices and kind of, you know, like I said, I think I resisted somatic work because it didn't feel safe for me, you know, because my body held on to a lot. Even if I could like intellectualize it away, my body held on to a lot. And so, yeah, like for anybody listening who's like, I don't know if this feels safe, what are these practices? Maybe you could elaborate a little bit on that part of it too.
Yeah. And also, I just want to acknowledge that it's so great to hear you say that the relationship that you're having to the timeline of it feels really great, right? Rather than being like, oh, I should have started earlier, or, you know, I wish I'd started, which are valid statements, right? Instead to be like, okay, this is the right timing for me, is such, it instantly makes more space, right? And that's just so great to hear. So one of the sort of hallmarks of the way that I approach somatics, and I learned this from my primary teachers, Patty Townsend, who created a style of yoga called embodied yoga, which listeners should definitely check out. She's wonderful. And then her primary somatic teacher, Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, who developed what's called body mind centering. So that's kind of like my somatic mom and my somatic grandma, right? And so in that lineage, the first thing we do is find the ground and deepen our relationship with the ground. Bonnie and Patty refer to it as yielding. I sometimes refer to it as that, but sometimes I just, you know, call having a relationship with gravity, because it's this surrender, if you will, to that support that the earth offers, which is unconditional and truly trustworthy, even in the midst of, you know, you all are in LA, landslides are happening, and, you know, the world, we're going through some wild stuff. I've lived through some big floods. So it's not always true that we can just be like, oh, everything's fine and there's no surprises from on the earth's level. But right now, just sitting here, I can trust that the chair is going to hold me, that the house is going to hold me. And I can do that because of the way that gravity is working through the structures of the home and then the chair itself. So when I let my weight release into the chair, which then goes into the floor, which then goes into the house itself, which then goes into the earth, I am releasing my weight into an unconditional relationship that gravity offers. I let the earth pull me, and now I can find the ground. And what's really beautiful about that is that it's a relationship that's not just one way. So the earth also gives us support. You might have learned it as, you know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction in some laws of thermodynamics. In Newtonian physics, it's referred to as the normal force. It's basically like my teacup here sitting on the table is exerting a force on the table, and the table is exerting an equal and opposite force up into the cup. If an elephant were to come and stand on the table, that would be too much, and the table wouldn't have enough integrity to offer the equal and opposite amount of normal force. But the earth can handle elephants, skyscrapers, definitely three of us, right? So I can release myself into the earth, knowing that the earth is also going to support me, and that will just keep on happening. And the more I release myself into the earth, the more support I'm going to receive. So we can do that really, that can be a really quick thing, right? It doesn't even require, you know, a long focused practice. It can be a long, delicious focused practice, but doesn't have to be. If right now, as we're here and then listeners are listening, if you just let yourself breathe in your normal rhythm, right, without trying to change it in any kind of way, a couple things are going to happen. The first thing is that just by noticing that you're breathing, it's really likely that your breath is going to deepen, because attention is its own form of magic. So just by noticing that you're breathing, your breath is going to deepen. And then if we give our attention to the exhale, which is the releasing part of the breath, the relaxing part of the breath. The muscles release on the exhale. They have to work on the inhale. They effort on the inhale, they release on the exhale. So we let the release be complete. And we let our bodies release the breath and become a little bit more dense. If you think back to a time that you were in water, you might remember that when you inhale, you float a little bit more. When you exhale, you sink a little bit more. And that's happening right now too on land. So every time that you exhale, you can let yourself drop into gravity. And that could be, we could go into like some transcendent spaces, and I do really frequently. But even just sitting here, even just listening to each other, we can do that. And then if we were to get into a conversation that was politically charged or had some conflict or, you know, was had some of those more difficult to engage with emotions, we could do that and be able to stay in the conversation and stay in relationship longer and in a softer way, right? And so that's what I mean when I say that this kind of stuff can be really radical, even if it's not, you know, even if we're not taking heaps of time away. Like, you know, I don't have kids, but my friends that do, it's like they don't have time for like a long dedicated practice. But this kind of practice, this kind of thing can be a woven in part of the day.
Thank you for sharing that. I think it also brings it back to what we were talking about earlier when you're talking about sort of imagining a future and how this work sort of on the individual or family or sort of interpersonal level can actually have impact in a practical way in creating the kind of future we see or we strive for. Because in that example that you just gave, it's like instead of the ways in which we either, you know, fall into the despair or check out, you know, check out back into what's comfortable, what's easy, what's, you know, disassociate from having to engage with like the difficult part of it. It's like some of these practices, it sounds like, allow us to stay in it without, I don't know, without having the same sort of like perhaps physical response that we might otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know it's more than just nervous system work, but it's like, obviously the nervous system is a part of the whole body, right? So it's like this idea of like, oh, well, I'm going to go into my, you know, this is feeling charged or this is feeling uncomfortable. So I'm going to go into my like, my fight or flight or fawn or whatever like sort of like go-to things are. Like being able to sort of work through that and create sort of safety to stay in discomfort, like so long as it's not a threat, you know what I mean? A real threat to our harm. I think perhaps like a lot of value could be created in those little small steps or those little smaller spaces that this kind of work allows us to get into. And I'm new to it too. I know people who've deeply benefited from somatic work. But I think this conversation is making me more curious to try it. Cause even the way you were talking about the breath, I felt myself like automatically relax into it and be more conscious of it. Like, oh yeah, like I'm sitting on this chair, which is, you know, I don't think about gravity that often, but like it's our friend in a lot of ways. Sometimes it's not our friend, but sometimes it's our friend on a regular basis and how it allows us to be. And I think also thinking about these concepts and you talk about it like, yes, the anatomical parts of it, the like the cellular parts of our body, looking at our body as like in relationship to the cosmos and elements, you know, in the universe. I think also with, you know, with people, as Erica was saying, like if you hold trauma in the body or whatever that might be, I think remembering that there's more to it than just the way we try to present in the world or the way we try to look in the world or the way, like, you know, yes, we can go into like, how do you want to feel? But like, I think remembering that there's deeper connection to the earth, to the world around us, to the stars, that we're all made of the same stuff at the end of the day. I think it helps also like reframe maybe our own relationship to our body, which can get lost sometimes with all the stuff that we're being sold.
Even, just like what you're saying, like gravity not being our friend, it's like, well, only if we're trying very hard to stay in that youthful state where everything is perky.
Right, that's true.
Or the way that we have been, like our language often leads us to think of our body as a machine. I talk about this a lot in the book, like, you know, the heart's a pump and we have to fix ourselves. And, you know, even Spanish is my second language. And, you know, I was talking with some friends about like how, you know, you get ready and use the same word for getting ready, arreglarse, that you would use to like fix up your car, right? So there's like these languages that like these things that are baked into our language that make us feel like we have to be more like machines. But by kind of reorienting ourselves to the natural world where, you know, it softens for me so many of these sort of really tired stories that say that I'm only valuable if I look a certain way, that I have to always be working, that I have to, that I should be ashamed of weakness or age in any, or vulnerability in any kind of way, that I shouldn't need anyone else. Like all of these different things that are just, they're just so far from the truth. And it lets me remember that, you know, even things like the long dark winter suddenly open themselves in these really beautiful ways because I'm looking around and the trees look like the dendrites of my own nerve cells. And that's really beautiful. And I get to be in awe of that rather than just wishing that the summer would get here. Right. There's just a softness that comes when we reorient ourselves to nature and ourselves as part of nature.
Yeah. And I think too, right, this like dismantling of these stories that are meant for control really more than anything and power. And, you know, because I know our listeners can't see me, but I'm in like all like bright Barbie pink as we're recording this interview. And when you were talking to it reminded me, you know, there was when the Barbie movie came out and all of the noise about, you know, the anger towards it being too feminist or too whatever, you know, these men, right, started coming after the way Margot Robbie looks, right? Like calling her mid, if anybody. And to me, it was so funny because it's like, you know, and again, it's Margot Robbie is an objectively beautiful, you know, like couldn't be more stereotypically beautiful. And when she was in Wolf of Wall Street, that put her under a gaze that men appreciated, she was everything. And now she's in Barbie and she's mid and she's not that pretty and she shouldn't have, right? Like the tear down of what happens, you know, and then what does that messaging share to some young women? Well, stay small. Don't speak up. Cause like Margot Robbie is not even, you know, immune to this. It's just interesting the way our culture plants seeds. But for me, and again, it might just be age and it might just be time that this all comes with. And I am hopeful because of, you know, I think social media can be terrible, but I think it can also be wonderful because I certainly didn't have access to positive information that's also out there now. But I'm hopeful that younger women can see that. And for me, it's just more of like, wow, this is just a perfect example of it's not about the external, right? Like this is a problem with our society, like the dismantling, right? That you talk about and that we, you know, I think there's examples of it even from pop culture, right? Just the smallest of things. So yeah. And I just, yeah, I find it to be really fascinating, all of this in ourselves and the right, like we don't even realize how much that messaging then plants seeds in our head of like, well, how am I supposed to behave to be safe in this culture and who does that hurt and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, thank you though. Thank you so much for everything that you've shared with us. Thank you for writing this book that everybody needs to go out and buy. And I feel like we could talk to you for another hour, but as we begin to wrap up, we do always conclude with three wrap-up questions. And I'm so curious about the first one for you, especially because of the work you do. And I imagine taking so much in, right? As well. What are some of your self-care practices and daily non-negotiables?
Oh my gosh, daily non-negotiables. That's really interesting. I am a Sagittarius. I am mutable to the core. So I don't have a lot of daily non-negotiables. Aside from, no, that's not true. Because time outside, non-productive time outside, meaning not necessarily a hike or some sort of workout or something like that, but just time to be outside in whatever weather. That's a non-negotiable. And then, as my partner could tell you, I am like, when I'm not working, I am very silly and a total goofball. And so that is actually really important. It like balances things out.
That's a Sagittarius.
There you go. Exactly. So silly goofball time with my partner and non-productive time outside are the ways that I manage to keep myself together.
I love it. Okay. The second question we ask everybody is, what does being courageous mean to you?
Ooh. And I know it's no secret to you all that, you know, the courage, what is it from the French of,
courage,
to be with heart?
The heart. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, since learning that the word courageous, definitely I have more insight into it. And I think of how the heart, you know, it works so strongly because it also rests so completely and it's stitched into the center of our chest in this really beautiful, very supported way. So I think to be courageous is to be consistent, but not consistently efforting, right? But to consistently work away at what is important, but to be held, to let yourself be held as you do it. And I get those lessons from the heart completely.
Beautiful. The last question we always ask is there a book that has meant something to you on any topic, on anything that you would like to recommend to our audience?
Okay. Yeah. The book that I have put into more people's hands, hands down, is this book, Momo, by Michael Ende. He wrote The Neverending Story. So it's a young adult book. I love it. Don't watch the movie. The movie was terrible. But where it's like Neverending Story, like, because you can think like, oh, Neverending Story. But no, they did a very, very bad job with the movie. But the book is so good. And Momo is this child that shows up at the edge of this town and has such a capacity to deeply listen that the townspeople realize that all they have to do is go spend time with Momo, and like their inner sort of desires and confusions and hurts and all these things just can kind of come out to be healed. And then, so that part's cool just on itself. Cause then Momo, when no one's around, Momo goes and listens to just like the music of the stars, which like right there, that's enough to make that book my favorite book ever. But then these men in gray show up and they convince people to open time savings accounts where they have to save time. And Momo's the only person that actually notices them because Momo pays attention, right? But so everyone opens these time savings accounts. And then because of the men in gray had this like kind of magic where they make people forget that they did that. So they just start trying to save time. But the more time they save, the less time they have. And all of a sudden, all the things that gave life meaning, like sitting with your neighbors and just chit-chatting or watching the sunset or, you know, taking your mom some flowers, all those things are wastes of time and save time. They don't do it. And that's all I'm going to share because the rest of the book is just so freaking cool. But I read that book at least once a year. And I've given it to so many people.
Wow.
That, I highly recommend it.
Thank you. That's such a great recommendation. I love when we get like books, like fiction books or even like what I just love those recommendations. So I just wrote that down. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And I'm on a mission to like have more people read it so I can reference it and have people understand what I'm saying.
Oh my God. I love it. It's so funny. Not in as like profound of a book, but I've gotten into like fantasy in the last year. And I just want everyone to read fantasy books so I could talk about it more. Mm-hmm. So it's like, but thank you so much again for everything you shared. If anybody wants to find you, follow you, buy your book, where can they do that online?
Yeah. So my name is my website and my email handle. So my Instagram handle. So find me there. And my website is abigailroseclark.com. The book is sold literally everywhere books are sold. So you can Google that and find it. Get it from your favorite indie bookstore. That's awesome. But then, yeah, reach out to me. Send me a DM. Send me an email. info@abigailroseclark.com will make its way to me. And I love hearing from people about what the book is meaning to them. If they have questions, I love all of that. So definitely do it.
Awesome. Thank you again. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Courageous Wellness. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode featuring a different guest each week.
Subscribe, rate, and write us a nice review. And you can also follow us on Instagram @CourageousWellness or get in touch via our website, www.CourageousWellness.net, where you can also find additional info about our health coaching services, virtual group events, newsletter, and more.
Until next week, I'm Allie.
And I'm Erica, and we're Courageous Wellness.